The wide, wide world of sports is going on here.
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
B&E.
What's B&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
You think we've gotten too radical with our message? Well, I got news for you. You ain't heard nothing yet. And if you don't know, now you know. Glory, glory!
Put them together. Coming up about 9 minutes, we'll talk to our friend Dan Neal. The lifetime Longhorn, two-time Super Bowl champion. Does he believe that the Longhorns have what it takes to fix what ails them here in this bye week and finish out football games? Is it physical? Is it mental? Is it both? Is it coaching? We'll talk to Dan about that. All things, and I think some people know that. You may not know, I went to a junior high school with Dan Neal and high school with Dan Neal way back in the day, the mean streets of Northwest Houston. Dan was a much better athlete than a great football player there at Cypress Creek High School, then here to Texas, and then off to the NFL. But he's been a longtime friend. Actually, we did a show together for quite a while here on these airwaves back in the day. But Bucky out this morning, as you can hear. No Buck this morning. He's doing all the medical tests that we talked about on Monday and Tuesday. Of course, he had his very scary episode on Saturday morning, or Friday night into Saturday morning, after the Lake Travis High School football game, when he felt some double vision and some dizziness and disorientation and wasn't sure what was going on, but got to the hospital and got checked out, which was great that he was in the right place at the right time when it occurred, but needs to get in and figure out what was going on and what else was going on. So a lot of poking and prodding today with the Buck and some procedures and tests and whatnot. So he'll be back tomorrow. Isaiah Collier is here, but we do have a great guest lineup from here to the end of the program. Halfway through a Wednesday edition, the 20th of October. See these clouds you're looking up at? If you're out this morning, they're going to remain most of the day. Mostly cloudy day in Austin, Texas today. Humidity coming back. The temperature's rising a little bit. But I look forward because, love to look forward, that the weather looks great for the weekend, Zay. You're not the, have you ever been out to the F1 event?
I've been out there, but not for this type of event.
Okay. You've been to COTA?
Yeah.
But you've never been to F1, the ultimate.
Yeah, I've driven the little go-karts out there.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, yeah, those are fun.
It's an amazing track, and I actually drove out there yesterday to pick up some passes that we needed for the radio station. So I live out that way in Onion Creek, so it's a quick little drive, so I volunteered to run over there and pick them up. And it's coming alive. I mean, it's going to be a spectacle of speed and sound and then the music, the concerts. But, man, it's a huge race. It's a big race in the F1 calendar. Formula One racing is a global, it's global billionaires racing is what it is, but it's coming to Austin, which is cool. It does look like there could be a chance for some rain on Sunday. I don't want to jinx anything, but looking pretty good, though. Friday, Saturday, just a chance for some showers on Sunday, but should be okay for the race itself, which is coming up. And it comes at a good weekend because the Longhorns are off, the Cowboys are off, so we can kind of turn our attention to the F1 and everything else going on in the sports world. And I mentioned, because I like to be your friend here on the show of the people, Zay. This is the weekend. I'm just telling you, if you don't have tickets to F1, man, if you have tickets to Billy Joel, good for you. I mean, you got F1, the race, and then Billy Joel, the piano man. That'd be a heck of a day and a night. But if you don't have those, this is a good weekend to plan a date with the wife. If you've been somewhat ignoring each other here during the football season because the Longhorns are playing every Saturday and you're tailgating and, up in Dallas and back and all this, this is a good weekend for that. The good weekend, Zay, because Cowboys are off. You don't got to worry about that on Sunday. And I'm telling you, the lineup of games, you're not going to miss much on Sunday. There's like, I'm sure there'll be some big stories that come out of when we come in here on Monday, but the games themselves are, you're kind of searching for good games. And then the college ranks is very similar. I mean, gosh, as far as a national headliner, got to see it, got to be at a TV to watch it or try to get to it game, I don't see one this weekend. There actually is a pretty decent game tonight, Zay, with the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers.
You need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here.
Damn right. Number 14 team in the country. They're going to be at Appalachian State. And we know App State's always a good team. They've got two losses this year. Lost to the University of Miami in a two-point game and then got beat last week by the Billy Napier and the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana. But that's actually a pretty good football game. That's going to be a Wednesday night special in college football. But the game, one of the games of the week this week is in the Big 12 with Oklahoma State at Iowa State. And that's kind of the week it is. But Oklahoma State, after the win over Texas, surviving the Longhorns and dominating that fourth quarter, they're now sitting there as an undefeated team, ranked number 8 in the country. And how about this? First time, I got to get the numbers, but it's the first time in a long time that a top 10 team is the underdog against an unranked team. And that is actually the case. When they go to Iowa State to play unranked Iowa State on Saturday, Vegas has Iowa State favored to win the game, which kind of goes to, adds to the frustration of Longhorn fans, you know, watching that game, knowing that Texas should have beaten Oklahoma State. They did, you know, when I say the better team didn't win, I get criticized, but the more talent, I mean, the tougher team won that game. And maybe it's fair to say the better team, T-E-A-M, won the game, that played like a team and fought like a team for four quarters. That's fair. But as far as, you know, who was the superior team, I guess for three quarters, I thought it was pretty obvious who the better team was. And there were verges, it was on the verge of a blowout at one point. And that's the frustrating part. And now further evidence of that is that Oklahoma State, even though they're ranked number 8 and they're number, you know, top 10 team undefeated, they're an underdog playing at an unranked Iowa State, which tells you what the folks in Vegas think of what Oklahoma State's all about with Spencer Sanders and company. So that's where the Longhorns are. But this is a good weekend. Might want to go ahead and, now if you're a big Astros fan, there could be playoff baseball to worry about into the weekend. And that series got extended last night. Let's get to the headlines, including the drama, the high drama in both the National League and American League Championship Series last night. Top Gun, Lana Quinn Reynolds bring you the news. And man, what a quite a day and night in baseball, National League and American League Championship Series. The early game yesterday, the defending champion Dodgers rallied from 5-2 down in the eighth inning to stun the Atlanta Braves. How about this ball game? One out in the eighth inning. Braves up 2-0 already and up 5-2 in the ball game. A two-strike count to Cody Bellinger with two aboard.
Presenting the tying run here in the eighth inning. And he sends one high and deep. Yes. Way back right center field. We are tied! Cody Bellinger strikes again!
Unbelievable high fastball that he got at, he tomahawked it out of the park. Mookie Betts then a couple batters later with a big clutch double to score the go-ahead run. Dodgers hold on in the ninth. Kenley Jansen shut it down, and the Dodgers win that ball game 6-5 and avoid a 3-0 hole in that series. It's now 2-1 Braves. Game four is tonight. Then last night, high drama at Fenway Park in Boston, where the Astros finally got some quality pitching out of their bullpen. After Zach Greinke gave up a couple of early runs, the bullpen held it. Astros and Alex Bregman gave the Astros an early run with a home run. It's 2-1 all the way to the eighth inning. 2-1 Red Sox with the lead. Jose Altuve led off the eighth inning with a home run to tie the game at 2, then to the ninth in a 2-2 game. Red Sox manager Alex Cora makes the decision to go to his starting pitcher, Nathan Eovaldi, in the ninth inning. Carlos Correa led off the ninth for the Astros with a double, but strikeouts of Kyle Tucker and Aledmys Diaz made it two outs with runners at first and second for Jason Castro, the Astros' light-hitting catcher. He's batting with two strikes.
That is a base hit into center. Correa coming to the plate. Astros take the lead here in game four.
Huge, huge knock for Castro on a two-strike pitch, and the Astros take the lead. They go on to score seven runs in the ninth inning. Michael Brantley had a big bases-clearing double in that rally. Astros win it 9-2. They take game four, even the series at 2-2. Game five this afternoon, the all-important now game five of a best-of-seven series, and it's a battle of left-handers and a good one. Framber Valdez, the opening night game one starter for Houston, facing Chris Sale. That game just after 3 o'clock this afternoon. Also last night, NBA regular season opened with a doubleheader of action in Milwaukee. The world champion Bucks raised their banner to the Raptors and then ripped Brooklyn 127-104. Giannis with 31 points, 14 rebounds. Also last night, Steph Curry posted an opening night triple-double to lead the Warriors past the LA Lakers 121-114. Curry finished with 21 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. LeBron James had 34 in the loss.
Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. Football's back. Come do your end zone dance after you buy or rent the equipment you need and win a bottle of 1942 Don Julio or Blanton's Whiskey. TopGun.net will shoot you straight.
Here's a guy who says, E, good call. Taking the wife to the steakhouse. VY Steakhouse on Saturday night. There you go. Here's another one that says, wife and I are going to bar hopping Saturday night. Armadillo Den, which is a great spot on Manchac. Moon Tower, which is right next door. Luster Pearl, which is right down a little bit further on Manchac. That's a good idea. It says, who knows where the night goes from there. Well, enjoy that. Be safe. Take your Ubers and have a good time. It's one of those weekends. One of those weekends. It's not an off weekend, but there's not, you know, marquee games, and the Longhorns and Cowboys are taking the weekend off. But after what we saw last night, I will certainly be having to be glued to the playoff baseball because the Astros series is now going back to Houston. We'll talk more about the dramatics last night at Fenway Park. But right now, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. Always love talking football and really anything with our buddy Dan Neal, the lifetime Longhorn. Dan, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Aaron. How you doing?
Doing good, doing good. Frustrating, I think, is the word on this, the current Longhorn team, these last 2 weeks and second halves, fourth quarters. What's your thought watching this team right now not be able to close out football games?
Yeah, you know, look, the way I look at this team, the things that I kind of look at first and foremost with any football team, do they play hard for four quarters and give forth effort? I mean, there's no question about this team that they do that. They just haven't learned to finish teams. And there is a process to learning, the understanding the importance of a drive in the third quarter when you're up by 14 points, that this may be that opportunity to put them away and not executing and not getting it done at that time. And then before you know it, it's a tie ball game, you're behind, and you're like, what happened? You know, they got to learn the importance of every situation throughout that game, even when you have a lead, that could be the play that decides the game.
Yeah, and you hear Sark talking about that now, the the next play mentality, that you know, whether you're up or you're down, it's the next play. And you played long enough, Dan, college, high school, pro. I mean, you've seen it all the way to the Super Bowl. I mean, momentum in a football game is a real thing. I mean, it really, one sideline gets geeked up and they start playing with a little extra edge, and the other side maybe tenses up a little bit. I mean, it's at every level you see it, and you've been a part of it.
It certainly have. You know, a big part of this, you know, when you talk about football teams, when the momentum is against you a little bit and like, how do we get it back? This is where you have your playmakers step up. That's why you look at these great teams. There's kind of those one or two guys that seem to make that play when they desperately need it to retain the momentum or to gain the momentum. And that's kind of what I think Texas is missing right now, is making those key plays when they need to get a hold of that momentum of a football game.
Yeah, and I think that was key on Saturday in the stadium. Jordan Whittington not being there, you could kind of tell when things were going south and Oklahoma State was stacking the line to stop Bijan. And Oklahoma State was doing a good job on the freshman, Xavier Worthy. They just didn't have that go-to guy you're talking about, Dan, the guy that could make a play and break a tackle and extend a drive. Because at that moment, you could even feel it. They just needed a first down. I mean, they needed something to move the chains, to get a fresh set of downs, to maybe build some momentum on their side.
Yeah, and you heard Sarkisian say it after the Oklahoma loss. It's the same thing as Oklahoma State loss in the second half. The inefficiency on first down led to third and long, which are not high percentage, and this team isn't good enough to convert third and long plays. And so that's where they found themselves again in the third and fourth quarter. Inefficiency on first down, no one else stepping up making a play, punt, punt, punt. And then your defense is in a tough position when you do that.
Yeah, and you know, my thought, Dan, I think it echoes yours just listening to your opening thought there, that you know, I watch a team that for two and a half, three quarters is really a good football team. I mean, they're buttoned up. They're, you know, I thought the pick six this past Saturday before the first and for the halftime was huge. That could have gotten Oklahoma State completely out of the game they wanted to play if they could have put another score on the board there. Instead, you know, it's a 10-point swing and it goes the other way. That was huge. But I see a pretty good football team that has some chances. What do you do in this bye week if you're Sark and this coaching staff to A, keep the confidence up, but then to rep this with these guys, that this is how we have to perform to finish football games?
Well, good point. I think the thing about the confidence is, I think you saw in the Oklahoma State game, and that is you show them the three plays that made the difference in the football game, and that, hey, guys, we make these three plays, we win. You know, and so that shows the players how close they are to achieving what they want to achieve. And then somehow you got to, in that same note, rep the importance of, we got to make those three plays. You know, we got to do it, and that's how you put a team away. I look at this team, and I think kind of, you got to understand, you know, the Sark and his staff are kind of dealing, you know, they're playing with a short deck here. They don't have the talent some of the other teams have, and they're doing the most with what they have. So it's a difficult situation for them, but I really like a lot of the things they're doing, especially when you talk about, as you mentioned, the first and second quarter. They come out, and I mean, the last two games, they've looked unbelievable. They just can't sustain it, and that's what they got to figure out this bye week, is getting these guys to play at that same level for four quarters.
Yeah, and I know Sark, all coaches talk about complementary football, Dan. I mean, you heard it your whole career. You know, offense helps defense helps offense. And, you know, I know we came in on Monday and people are beating up on, you know, Pete Kwiatkowski and the defense again for the fourth quarter, couldn't get the stops and couldn't stop basic running plays. But, you know, I thought the defense played a pretty good game through three quarters. They hadn't allowed an offensive touchdown. They were forcing field goals. They weren't giving up big plays. But, you know, the complimentary side of it, at some point, your offense goes three and out four straight times, and that defense, that just wears you down. And at some point, people, you know, fans will call it an excuse, but that's a real thing when the other team is fresh and you've been on the field a lot in that third, fourth quarter. What do you make of the defense right now, you know, trying to have enough guys to finish four-quarter games?
I'm with you. I like a lot of the things the defense does. You know, they seem to kind of wear out. And again, as you pointed out, probably due to the offense not giving them a chance to rest and not making plays in the second half. You know, there's some things that I kind of question. There's some things on offense that I question. I mean, I question all of it, but I think all in all, I like a lot of the things they're doing. Again, I think that there's some lack of talent in some spots, and that shows up. I mean, the other team sees it too, and they start to slowly attack it, and they can exploit it over time, given enough opportunities. I look, and I said this before the Oklahoma game, and you look at the rest of the schedule, go back to that week. There's not a team they can't beat. There's also not a team that can beat them, and I'd argue OU and Oklahoma State, Texas could have, should have won those games. So I still say the same thing. Texas has the ability to win the rest of their games. They just got to find out a way to get it done and win the games. It's there. And then I only think this team, as the talent grows, is going to get better and better.
Yeah, and they're trying to – yeah, you said they're trying to battle, you know, fight two wars at this point. They're trying to, you know, get the most out of this team, but also recruit for the future and know they've got to add some pieces. Dan Neal is with us, the lifetime Longhorn, of course. He was great offensive lineman with the Longhorns in the Longhorn Hall of Honor, two times a Super Bowl champion with the Denver Broncos. Dan, the player-led side of this, I asked Rod Babers this question last Saturday after the blown lead at Oklahoma, and then we saw it again with Oklahoma State, and Rod's answer was, guys, you know, we talk about repping things. He said, this got to come from the players. I mean, there's got to be leadership within the players that in those moments, to your point, Dan, the guys that are going to step up and make a play and demand a level of performance. And I noted on that with Rod that, you know, six of the seven captains from a year ago have moved on. Sam Ehlinger was the absolute leader of this team. Do you feel like that's something that can develop? I mean, they got to find some guys who are on the field, not the coaches, who can lead in pivotal moments when things are going poorly.
Rob is absolutely correct. All great teams have great leaders on the field. and that's the understanding that all players need to get to. And it's a difficult one. And that is, it's their football team. It's not the coach's team. It's their football team. It's up to them what they want to do with it. And that's why I really felt like that Oklahoma State loss was a tough one, because going into that game, you still have a clear path to the Big 12 championship game. And ultimately, that's the goal of this team. And now you got to have a few things kind of fall into place for you to get there. But it's still out there. And you always play for pride, you know. And you're playing for a bowl game and things, a chance to finish the season on a good note and help get this program going the right direction. So there's always something to play for these guys. And that's for these seniors most often. But the players that are that leader – or the leaders need to really kind of step up and not let anybody give up on the year and keep fighting each week, each play, and play for that, the pride, and play for the University of Texas football and all the great players before them.
Yeah, I do feel like they do play hard, and they're playing. To me, they're playing smarter, at least for the first three quarters, than in years past, Dan. But as a player, having played for a long time, Dan, at all levels, how important is this bye week for a player when it's time to just, you know, you get into that monotonous routine of week to week, just to kind of get away from it a little bit? They practice 3 days and then get a weekend off. That a lot of times that can be a benefit at the right time of the year, and then this might be the perfect time for the Longhorns.
Yeah, I've always found that bye weeks are all dependent on what you do the week before. It's like if you win, the bye weeks are nice. If you lose, But I think, you know, to that point, the coaches, I think, are probably pretty proud of this team. And essentially, I think if you'd ask them maybe off the air, they'd tell you they're happy with where they're at. They've done a lot of good things. So I think this bye week is not going to be a matter of, you know, punishing them for losing two in a row. It's, hey, what's done is done. Let's focus on the next week and let's build and let's learn from some of the mistakes we're making and let's, you know, clean this thing up. And so as far as the players having a chance to rest a little bit and just kind of get away from it is nice, because it is Groundhog Day, and I can't tell you, you wake up and you do the same thing every day at the same time, day after day after day. So it's nice just to have a break of that routine.
Dan Neal, now you and I both grew up as Love You Blue Oiler fans in Houston, and we don't like the Cowboys, but I'm watching these Cowboys, Dan. I don't know how much you're seeing of them, but their offense starting to remind me of your like 98 Broncos teams, where you don't know what to do to stop them. They can run it.
Yeah.
The offensive line's really good. Quarterback's playing elite, and then he's got receivers and tight ends. I mean, that's how you guys were when you almost went undefeated the one Super Bowl year.
Yeah, it's absolutely the case. I mean, you have an elite running back who is very good. And, you know, I think we've all kind of, at least I have, I've always liked Dak Prescott. And I've kind of questioned, is he that elite quarterback? Well, you think he's shown everybody that he is. And also, you know, CeeDee Lamb is a guy that I was kind of thought, well, I haven't really seen him step up. And it seems like he's starting to step up this year. And you talk about a defense. I mean, what do you do? Okay, let's take away the run. Then it opens up the pass. Take the pass, can't stop the run. I mean, you can't really stop this team, you know, if everything's firing. And then that really, I think Dallas is that. The only way they're getting stops is stop themselves.
Yeah, and I remember you telling me that about when you were playing for the Broncos that year. I mean, it was John Elway, but you guys got to the line of scrimmage and felt like, you know, with Terrell Davis and the options and Shannon Sharp and Rod Smith and Ed McCaffrey, I mean, you guys, if you execute your play and execute your job, this defense, no matter how good they are, really can't stop us for four quarters.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I remember one game the defense trying to guess run or pass, and we're just laughing at them because they couldn't get it right one, and if they could get it right, they couldn't stop it. You know, so we just did whatever we wanted.
Yeah, and you know, and kind of like you guys with the Broncos, the defense is maybe not the 85 Bears, but opportunistic, got playmakers, guys who will make some plays and hit the quarterback. There's a lot to like. It's a good recipe that we've seen before.
Yeah, I mean, you like Dallas. I mean, you like where they're at. Obviously, Tampa Bay is kind of the team to beat. But as I mentioned after that Tampa Bay loss, really what it showed the Cowboys is we can play with these guys because they realize to get the Super Bowl, they're going to have to go back through Tampa later on in the year. And so this is a team, I think, positioned itself for that game.
Dan, appreciate it, my friend. Great to hear you. Hope everything's going well. And we'll catch up again soon when Bucky gets back.
All right. Hey, Aaron, have a great day.
All right, man. Dan Neal, good friend, good buddy, long time, but also good analysis on the Longhorns, and we'll weigh in on that. Now, there's Dan Neal's thoughts, and I know we're already getting into the text that Dan clearly doesn't watch the games. What's he talking about? They're doing some nice things and proud of where they are. I mean, I think Dan sees where the talent deficiencies are and what they're coaching around at Texas right now in a lot of places, and they put themselves in a position to beat a couple of top 10 teams in back-to-back weeks, and you know they haven't finished. Is that on the coaches? Is that on the leadership? Is that on you know, players, whatever. We can point fingers and place blame. But I agree with Dan 100% that I have liked what I've seen out of this coaching staff, getting clean teams ready to play, installing game plans that are going to give you a chance to win the ball game, and even coaching around some of the talent deficits that they go to battle with on a week-by-week basis. But, Zay, we know this, right? On the, 1996? Today's 2021. So, on the 25th anniversary? The 25th anniversary of this famous rant from Jim Mora, when he was the coach of the New Orleans Saints. This is what Texas fans want to hear from the coaches and Steve Sarkisian specifically about the football team.
Well, what happened was that second game, we got our ass kicked, or the second half. We just got our ass totally kicked. We couldn't do diddly poo offensively. We couldn't make a first down. We couldn't run the ball. We didn't try to run the ball. We couldn't complete a pass. We sucked. The second half, we sucked. We couldn't stop the run. Every time they got the ball, they went down and got points. We got our ass totally kicked in the second half. That's what it boiled down to. It was a horse performance in the second half. Horse. I'm totally embarrassed and totally ashamed. Coaching did a horrible job. The players did a horrible job. We got our ass kicked in that second half. It sucked. It stunk.
I kind of wonder if Texas fans, if that would make him happy, if that's how Sark got to the post game, and that's what he said. Because we know Jim Mora at the time resigned the next day. Resigned after just burying his team in diddly poo, Zay. It was diddly poo, my favorite part of that epic rant 25 years or so ago. But yes, that described the Longhorns on Saturday pretty much to a T. But got to stay positive. Still a lot of football to be played a week from Saturday against the Baylor Bears. We'll come back, pick up the conversations in the morning. How clutch was Cody Bellinger last night and Mookie Betts and the Dodgers? How about the Astros rallying for 7 runs in the 9th inning? We'll keep that going. Also, speaking of Texas football, we'll get the thoughts of another lifetime Longhorn and legendary former player. Quan Cosby joins us in the 9 o'clock hour. His thoughts on the Longhorns at the bye week, part of a busy, busy Wednesday on 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Wednesday on the Horn, B&E with you, dragging you up over the hump of a busy week, but into it, what is it you said? I think it's kind of a C-level football weekend, because we've certainly had A-level football weekends for sure, especially over the last couple of weeks, but not great as far as the marquee games. There are some big ones for sure, but nothing you can't miss, I think. And that's why we say date night weekend could be on tap for you this weekend. Thank you to Dan Neal. Good stuff on Texas football. Also, at the end, we talked about the Cowboys and their offense. Zay, do you realize this as I get my regimen ready for maybe walking shoes and the whole bit as we're talking about? Command Sergeant Major Burgoyne out there at Fort Hood is going to help me with a military-style regimen to get ready to walk, because the Cowboys are averaging 460 yards per game as an offense. That's a lot, right? And so they're on pace for 7,373 total yards just through 16 games. I just went through 16 games. But we know they're playing 17 games. So the Cowboys are on pace to shatter every offensive record that's ever been. Because I just looked up during the timeout just to make a note. Best offenses of all time on this current list from NFL.com, 1999 St. Louis Rams, greatest show on turf. They averaged just over 400 yards per game, about 414 per game. The 07 New England Patriots, Tom Brady to Randy Moss over and over again. They ended up undefeated until the Super Bowl when they lost. They averaged just about 410 yards per game on a game-by-game basis. And you go down the list, the closest team, I think this would surprise a lot of people, to that total yardage number, because you'd go through, because you'd mentioned Dan Neal's 1998 Denver Broncos with Terrell Davis and John Elway, not close. Closest to them, and I know I wouldn't have guessed this, the 2013 Denver Broncos, led by Peyton Manning, at quarterback, and then a running game that was just ridiculous with no Sean Moreno. And remember those guys, no Sean and the two-headed monster running back? They rushed for about 117 yards a game, and Manning threw for 340 yards per game. So that's the closest we've seen to where the Cowboys are right now, because the Cowboys are averaging 460 yards of offense per game through six games. Now, just six games. But that's impressive, and it's on the all-time list. It's as good as it's ever been as far as an offense goes. And to hear Dan Neal talk about it, who played on an offense in the NFL that won a Super Bowl that felt like they couldn't be stopped because they were so multidimensional. That's what you watch, what you want when you watch the Cowboys, because much like with Dan's 98 Broncos, it started with that offensive line that was so good. They could run the ball at will with Terrell Davis, and then they ran play action off of that, which then you've got John Elway and his ability to make all the throws to guys like Rod Smith and Ed McCaffrey and Shannon Sharpe in the Hall of Fame. And this is what you watch with the Cowboys through six games: is how do you stop it? The only reason the Patriots were in the ball game Sunday was the Cowboys' penalties and their own mistakes is what led to they have 12 penalties and backed them up and decision making. They didn't get a fourth down early in the game that gave New England a short field touchdown. So, just saying, the numbers back up what I think our eyeballs are telling us. This is a really dynamic offensive football team with an opportunistic defense, which during its bye week now, Zay, has a chance to get better because this is a new defense and new staff with Dan Quinn. They can absorb what they've done for six games and really try to polish up some of the things they're doing on that side of the ball.
Yeah, that's great company to be in. You named some really good teams there. I loved that 98 team that Dan was on with Elway and those boys. But, yeah, it all just depends on Dak being healthy and staying healthy through the whole entire season, because it rides on him, which I'm sure that's what he wants with how he's been playing.
You're right. You're right about that. And he's got to stay healthy. That's the key. And that's the exciting part for the Cowboys, on top of the other exciting parts we just mentioned, is that they have a chance to get healthier. They're getting layout. I mean, they've already been and weathered some pretty significant injuries here. early in the year. And they're going to get healthier at right tackle with Lael Collins. But winning games without Lael Collins for five games allowed them to build depth and allowed Terrence Steele to get in there and really continue to improve. And that gives you more depth on the O-line. Michael Gallup will be back at wide receiver. DeMarcus Lawrence will be back at defensive end, which is another – he's maybe the best player on the defensive side. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like about where the Cowboys are headed. Gosh, and Neville Gallimore will be coming back, the defensive tackle. I mean, they've got, like, starters that are coming back. So, a lot to be excited about with the Cowboys. A lot to be excited about in baseball last night. That's as good a day of baseball and night of baseball as I've been a part of in a while as far as just a total fan of playoff baseball and the game. That was really, really compelling. Do you have the Rudy T? Because this is what this – when I came in this morning thinking about what I watched yesterday and last night, and we all got to see if you paid attention to the baseball, was the Dodgers are the defending champions. Astros have been a champion. You know, the heart of a champion. You know, don't underestimate it. And here was – what was this, 1995, Zay, when my man Rudy T had this to say on the floor of the Summit down in Houston.
No one has ever done what this team's done. Come from the sixth seed, down in series. We won nine road games, and we had non-believers all along the way. I have one thing to say to those non-believers. Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
And that's that was reminded, I mean, because the Dodgers are champs until proven otherwise. And that game yesterday, it looked all for – they were lost. I mean, Charlie Morton started for the Braves, the former Astro, and he gave up two runs in the first inning. If you know Morton's history, he has first inning troubles. But if he can weather the first inning, Morton usually becomes dominant, which he was. The Dodgers got two on him in the first, and that was it, though. And then the Braves bats got to Walker Buehler. And next thing you know, you look up, it's the seventh inning, it's 5-2 Braves. 5-2, and they're already up 2-0. And this thing, the Braves dugout is feeling great. And then you get to the eighth inning. All you need now is five more outs with a 3-run lead to take a 3-0 advantage in the series. Huge, and heart of a champion shows up. Cody Bellinger, who's not had a great season in the regular year but has turned it on in the postseason, he rips the home run on the high fastball. Game tied. Mookie Betts breaks the tie, and then Kenley Jansen shuts it down. That couldn't have been more clutch. And we mentioned earlier, Zay, but it bears repeating here in the 8 o'clock hour, in all of their postseason history, 81 games applied to this, where the Dodgers were down three runs or more in the eighth inning or beyond, they had never come back and won a game in that scenario in their postseason history for the Dodgers. And it's a lengthy history. We know that with that organization. It had never happened before. They get up off the deck, and I think it's fair to say swing the series. They lose that series over. Braves are up 3-0. They've got four chance. They got, you know, the rest of the series to win one more ball game. Odds of that are statistically, Braves are going to be in the World Series. That's how big that eighth inning hit was for Cody Bellinger. And then I feel like with the Astros, same kind of thing. I mean, they're battling through, you know, pitching issues. They finally got some good pitching yesterday. You know, both teams scored runs early. Greinke gave up the 2-run homer in the first inning. Bregman hit a home run for the Astros, so it's 2-1 all the way to the eighth inning. But things are looking, if you're an Astro fan, you're feeling tight because you're like, man, we finally got, you know, good stretch of pitching from our bullpen, Christian Javier and some other guys, but we're not going to get any runs. Our offense is not going to deliver, and the offense wakes up. Altuve leads off the eighth with a dinger, ties the game, and then we know what happened in the ninth, 7 runs in the ninth inning. And I'll say this for the potential, you know, swing of the series there, because Alex Cora, the Red Sox manager, went to Nathan Eovaldi there in the ninth inning, thinking that could be an extra inning game potentially. I don't know when Eovaldi can come back now. I mean, maybe it's game 6, maybe game 7, but he went for the jugular there. Cora was trying to close this thing out, knowing he had the big pitching advantage in an extra inning scenario, and the Astros end up scoring 7 in the ninth, winning the ball game. Just clutch stuff. And what looked like, you know, middle of the day yesterday, you feel like that series in the National League is about to get not very compelling because it's about to be 3-0. You feel like the Red Sox-Astros is about to be 3-1, and our World Series is now almost set here with Braves-Red Sox, and a couple of champions get up off the deck, find a way, and swing series. Houston now has Framber Valdez on the mound. They go back to their top-of-the-rotation starter for a game against Chris Sale today. Dodgers avoid a miserable situation with 5 outs to go. That was cool stuff. That was fun to watch, and we'll see where it goes. Now, to me, as a fan, I'm totally – you know, I was into these series to begin with, but now you're totally in because it's like a boxing match. You know, the champion responded with a flurry of blows, and now we'll see where this goes. And I know the Red Sox have been a champion before. We'll also get into, coming up, the Laz Diaz discussion. He was the horrible home plate umpire last night. Astro fans weren't happy with him.
It's garbage!
Red Sox fans are blaming him for the loss because of the Jason Castro at bat. We'll get into the home plate umpire discussion and how bad it was last night in that Red Sox-Astros game coming up. Plus, salacious gossip, and need you to load up your blitz. Without Bucky here, you always need to bring it strong. Bucky will be back tomorrow, so bring it as good as you can. It's only as good as you make it. Coming next, plus the gossip. First, it's Craig Way.
Didn't want to tell you that, because I ain't for no games, okay?
Oh, man, salacious gossip is brought to you by the Bud Light. To Bud Light, only four great ingredients and brewed right here each and every time. Brewed right here in the state of Texas, but every time it's fresh and refreshing. The number one selling light beer in the world, the world's favorite light beer is what that makes that. And great weekend for it. Whether you're taking my advice, doing a date night, just got a note from my brother. He's headed down to Houston for some playoff baseball at Minute Maid Park, which now the Astros have at least forced a game six in that series after the win last night. With seven runs, with two outs in the ninth inning. It'll be F1 weekend, so whatever your occasion this weekend, do it with an ice cold Bud Light. Be smart, be safe, but do it with the world's favorite light beer. Makes the good times great, the great times unforgettable. And maybe you want to get out and see some live music this weekend. Next hour, our buddy Tom Gimbel, GM of the ACL TV show, will be with us to provide your roadmap to the live music weekend. That's always good with the ice cold Bud Light. I do know my buddy Gino and his band that are called the Damn Torpedoes, Today is Tom Petty Day because Tom Petty would have had a birthday, and they're going to be out playing a concert tonight. They're a Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers cover band. I think they're playing Guero's. They're playing at Guero's in the garden there in the outdoor area. So if you want to get out and get your Tom Petty fix, I highly recommend those guys because they're good, and they sound like them. It's fun. You get all those Tom Petty classics, the whole catalog. So that's fun tonight if you want to get out and see some live music. But Tom will give us the whole roadmap coming up. We'll also get Quan Cosby's thoughts on the Longhorns. But Zay, the salacious gossip, Laz Diaz. Is this gossip or for rumor? Here's the headline from thebiglead.com, a subsidiary of USA Today, the newspaper. It says, Laz Diaz screwed the Red Sox in Game 4 of the ALCS. Now, this all points to a critical one-ball, two-strike count to Jason Castro, in which it appeared by the video evidence that the ball was a strike through a curveball that got plenty of plate and was right at the numbers, right at the letters of Jason Castro. Looked like a strike. He called it a ball because this guy was wickedly awful all night long. I mean, all over the place. And I texted our friend Gene Watson with the Kansas City Royals in the third inning and said, this guy, Laz Diaz, is a complete disaster. And that was in the third inning. This happened in the ninth inning. And calls it a ball. Jason Castro gets another swing. And, of course, two pitches later, he rips a single through the middle. Astros take the lead, go on to score 7 2-out runs and win the ball game. Zay, Laz Diaz, are you pinning this like the Red Sox fans are on the umpire last night?
I mean, not a good look, but that's baseball.
That is
baseball. Purists would say, hey, that's happened before.
Well, the study, the ESPN stats and info numbers show that he missed at least 21 pitches last night that were clear. like, think about that. Like, and under their grading system, like if it's even, you know, the box that they put up there, if it's even on the line, they don't even count it. So the 21 misses mean the ball was completely in the strike zone inside the box and he called it a ball, or it was completely outside the strike zone and he called it a strike. And that was Laz Diaz 21 times last night, including in several critical moments. And when I think that's gossip, Astros won the ball game. But, you know, your boy over here, Zay, has been advocating for the automated strike zone for years. Last night was case in point.
So the strike zone doesn't change based on your height?
No.
Okay.
No, the strike zone is clearly defined by the rule book of Major League Baseball. And yes, I mean, Jose Altuve's strike zone is different than Aaron Judge's strike zone based on their body type, but the actual parameters of the strike zone do not change.
Ah.
Which is why the box they put up on the broadcast is that's the strike zone. And that's how they grade umpires in the minor leagues. That's how they use the Questec system in the minor leagues. But, you know, beyond me. I think Red Sox fans have a right to be bitter, but the Astros got hosed on a number of those pitches last night. And that's why I think the game was 2-1 into the eighth inning, because nobody knew what the strike was a ball. I mean, they got three runs on the board in the first inning and never scored again until the eighth. Didn't know what the heck was going on with this guy. But that's typical of Laz Diaz. He is not a good umpire. Yet he continues to get big assignments like that. You explain it. I don't know. That's gossip as well. How about this? Hello from the other side and courtside. Adele. Adele's hanging courtside at the Laker game last night. You see this? The now 33-year-old Adele, the British singer, has a new album coming out later in the month. She's got a new single out, and she is dating Rich Paul, who TMZ has informed us is the agent of one LeBron James.
Yep, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, a ton of other guys, Clutch Sports. Yeah, Rich Paul's that guy.
Well, Adele's looking at the leather pants going.
Oh, she was stunting on them last night. She knows that song to hit. She knows it's the most streamed song out of any song ever. Yeah, she's doing very well.
Yeah, and she's looking good with Rich Paul, Laker fan now apparently, on the spot there. We've got that. We also have, I got to revisit the A.J. Brown story. I think this is unbelievable. A.J. Brown played Monday Night Football. Didn't know this until I heard Rod Babers and the crew talking about it yesterday on the afternoon show. I got to give major props to A.J. Brown, the wide receiver of the Titans, the former Ole Miss Rebel. He played Monday Night Football, Zay, with what Bucky would call bubble guts, what Bucky would also call the Rhea. He had a bad dose of Chipotle, apparently, and went out. He lost like 8 pounds during the day on Monday. They didn't think he was going to play, but he went out and played with the Rhea. That's, and I believe they were wearing white trousers, Zay. White. I'm telling you, that dude, you don't know when that's going to occur. And he caught 9 balls or something, or 7 balls for 91 yards, getting tackled by people. I got to give major props to your guy, A.J. Brown.
Yo, man, you remember Lamar Jackson? He had an issue where he had to run to the restroom last season.
Yeah, and you brought up the Paul Pierce story from the NBA Finals when he left in a wheelchair and everyone thought he was, you know, out for the series. Turned out he just had, you know, soiled himself.
Yeah, calling him Willis Reed. So bogus, man. So bogus. Can't believe it.
Let's go to your blitz.
The Bucky and E Blitz.
The Morning Blitz, brought to you by Apple Leasing, where you only have to pay for the new half of the car or truck, the half under factory warranty, in any make, any model. Click appleleasing.com and see how easy it is.
All right, first blitzer without the Buck. He'll be back tomorrow, but first blitzer, you are up. Bravo!
Hey,
man.
Say, Ivato, are you the only one or freaked that I'm the only one that's freaked out over seeing Dusty Baker flipping that toothpick, dude? One of these days, dude, he's going to fart and sneeze, and that toothpick's going to get jammed in his upper and lower gum, dude, and the TV's going to be right there.
I'm sure he's done it.
That hurts just thinking about it.
Yeah, old Dusty's been chewing on that toothpick forever. He's got the toothpick going when he wears a mask. I don't know how he does that. Next blitzer, you're up.
Hey, E,
yeah.
You know the only thing worse than that home plate umpire?
What's that?
Listen to Joe Buck cry about missed balls and strikes for his Red Sox. Dude was missing calls on the Astros all night.
Yeah, listen, Astros fans, you got to embrace your villain. Whether you like it or not, there are other villains, but you're the villain. You are the villain. That's the way that's going to go. Next blitzer, you're up.
God bless Daryl Roll and Bucky for giving them Aggies the sugar. And the strike zone is determined by the guy, the better, that's giving the most money to that umpire.
Yeah, go read the movie, read the book, Ball 4, Jim Bowden book. That will put it in perspective for you. Is that a thing, Jim Bowden? Next, Butcher, you're up.
Yeah, hey, this is Bryce Harper. Hey, yo, me and Laz have some beef, okay? That guy is annoying.
Who is? Who is he talking about, Zay? Did he retranslate that?
I think he's talking about the ump.
Oh,
Bryce Harper.
Laz. And by the way, when we come back, I'll read you what a current Wikipedia post, how it describes Laz Diaz. We'll come back and get you that. Next blitzer, you're up.
Yeah, hey, do you think Alex Cora gave the Astros access to their cameras in center field there in Fenway?
And the trash cans. Yeah, no, they're not doing that anymore. Next blitzer, you're up.
Coach Sark, are you going to learn how to manage a game and manage your talent during the bye week? If you were to use 5 the way they use 1, or OU used Kennedy Brooks, you would have won those games.
Well, all right. Well, then that's case in point. We'll see. That's what the bye week's about, getting better. Next Blitzer, you're up. Oh, no, turn your radio down. Yo, brother.
Hey, I'm here, man. Yeah, you don't want to wash your wore the leather pants at the Lakers ring courtside because you're not vaccinated for STD.
Oh, no. Oh! Adele doesn't have an STD.
Shut it down! Oh, let's go!
She said hello from the other side. You know what I'm saying? That's all for rumor. That's what she would say. It's all for rumor. Rumor has it. I think that's false. That's what salacious gossip's about.
Was that a shot at Magic, too?
What's that?
Was that a shot at Magic, too? Magic Johnson?
Oh, Magic Johnson. She's talking about Adele. Big Magic Johnson. What's he done? Was he at the Dodgers game or the Lakers game or both? I don't know. I don't know where Magic was yesterday. And we'll find that out. We'll also find out what Quan Cosby thinks about this Longhorn team at the bye week, 4-3. We've got Dan Neal's thoughts last hour. Also, Tom Gimbel with your live music roadmap for the weekend. Plenty to do on a Bucky-less Wednesday. We're rooting for him. He'll be back tomorrow. Live, local, and digital on 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. Streaming always on the Horn app on your smart speaker and at hornfm.com.